Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and once again, we're over to White Buffalo Fly Shop in Rolla, Missouri. I got sitting in front of me here, Billy Edgar. Billy's quite a fly tire. Quite a fly fisherman. I got to know him in the last couple of years and found out he's married a lady that he's a good bit younger than me. Gal I used to have in Sunday school class.
Oh, buddy.
How many decades ago? We don't want to tell
Sheila. I better not say that. Yeah.
We don't want to tell Sheila's age, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're 20 years older, though.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, we'll say that.
Hey, he's a fisherman. You know, you can never trust a fisherman. But hey, man, I tell you what, is any fly fishing going on this weekend?
It's a little wet out there today, yeah.
There's a lot of, boy, flooding like we haven't seen before.
I've never seen it like that before.
Well, different areas. I mean,
yeah.
Anywhere from 5 to 12, 13 inches I was hearing down on Black River country. But Huzo Valley Resort, which we're all familiar with, you know, the Cottrell family.
Yeah.
Had up more water than I guess they've ever had. They got like 3 feet of water up in their store building, which we hated to hear. They've got a lot of cleanup coming. But you know what? All of us been following the floods because there have been a lot of people rescued. And I guess thousands of campers had to be evacuated. And you're talking canoe rentals all across the Ozarks, just southeast Ozarks. And was no loss of life, so those guys really did a good job of getting people out.
Really good, yeah.
I think there's just one person, a lady from Davisville area, that's still missing the last I heard. So,
well, you know, I saw crews from all over Missouri and different states even coming down to help with the rescue efforts too. And it's really nice that we have like a support that'll come around and help out like that too.
It really is. Of course, the governor declared an emergency and. Down around Tongsawk Camp, there were like 200 kids and counselor people there.
Goodness.
And they brought in the Black Hawk helicopters to get those people out, and they took them to a local church or someplace where parents picked them up. Those kids will have a story to tell their grandkids.
That will be a story, won't it? Yeah. Yeah.
A little too much excitement, but, you know, it seems like the floods are getting more persistent and getting bigger all the time.
It does seem like it. I was just talking to someone the other day about how the floods seem like they're so different from what they used to be back in the day.
Well, there's all kinds of theories behind that.
There
you know,
it is.
We know that concrete and asphalt is part of it because more and more of the earth gets put under and
absolutely.
Water's got to go somewhere.
Yep.
Of course, climate change may have something with it to do as well. I'm not going to get into that too deep.
That's probably another podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's a good way to get shot, too.
Yeah, true that. Yep.
A lot of opinions about that. But the end result is a lot of devastation in these narrow river valleys. And, gosh, I just wrote a newspaper article right after the floods, during those floods. And it was pretty interesting going back in history, just Missouri history, with the phenomenal floods that happened over the years. I didn't realize there were so many huge ones, but it seemed like the last 20 years, how many 100-year, 500-year, 1,000-year floods have we had?
Yeah.
We've crammed a lot into the last 20 years, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think we're paid up.
Yeah, well, I know my grandpa and grandma's farm up there in Round Cook Station up there, there's a dry creek bed that's usually, you know, all year long that's dry, but it's flooded more than when I was growing up. I've never saw it like what's happened up there. There's just water running down through the, you know, through the valleys and floods like they've never seen before. So it's kind of crazy.
It's a new era for sure.
Yeah.
But in the studies I did looking up the Great Flood, you know, there was and in Missouri, they've been recording floods since way back in the late 1600s. I didn't realize that That must have been a Spaniard or somebody.
Yeah, something.
Taking notes.
Yeah.
But is that the cops coming after you?
I think they're coming after you, Bill.
You got a closet tied me in.
There we go.
Well, hope all's well with those folks, you know.
Yeah.
It's not raining, so I don't think it's a flood.
No flood today.
Yeah. But the big floods, there were a lot of them through the 1800s, around the early 1900s. World's Fair was in St. Louis in 1903. There's a big flood on the Mississippi in 1904. Mm-hmm. And the big flood I always heard about coming from Mississippi County, Missouri, was the flood of 1937. My dad was, I guess, still at home. Yeah, he would have been about 11 or 12 years old, I guess. And they lived in an old cypress house like a lot of people did, and it was up on about 6-foot stilts because they dealt with high water every year in those lowlands, you know, out of the Mississippi River. But this one particular year, 1937, the levees broke, and boy, water rushed in on them pretty quick, so they evacuated. But my dad and his dad went back to their home in an old cypress paddle boat to pick up a couple pieces of furniture or something, and they got caught in the dark.
Mm.
So they had to stay in that old cypress house overnight. Just, they went to bed and went to sleep. Woke up the next morning, they were close to a mile from where the house originally sat.
Goodness.
The water had come up a little bit more, had drifted off those stilts and floated along in that slow current all night long, never woke up. And they finally hung up on a sandbar. And man, how do you sleep through something like
that'd
that?
That'd be something.
Yeah,
holy cow.
Really would, wouldn't it? But
yeah.
I guess if the house is not coming apart, you could stay asleep.
No one doubt,
of,
yeah.
One of them was probably a loud snorer.
Maybe. Yeah, that could happen. I know a few people that could be like that.
Oh, I do too. But here we are today, and I can remember it's about 2016, I guess. I think that's the year that Eminence got tore up so badly.
Yeah.
But I was in Southwest Missouri with Ray I and several other guys at a turkey hunting camp down on the North Fork of the White.
Mm-hmm.
We got trapped in that country any direction we went. There were bridges that were gone or water over them, and we stayed a couple extra days.
I bet you did.
Well, I didn't mind, though. It's beautiful country.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah,
but flooding. Well, flooding and trout fishing, that's a tough subject. We know Merrimack Spring Park closed down with the floods. Everything that southeast of there was in a pretty bad shape. Now, Montauk, over the mountain divide, I guess, from the Black River, and they were still had clear water, low water, still canoeing and kayaking, trout fishing at Montauk and then the current river. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Glad the whole state didn't get plastered.
Yeah, for sure. So.
Well, Billy, last time I talked to you in the shop here a few weeks ago, we were chit-chatting as you were tying. If you're not doing anything else, you're tying flies.
Usually, yeah. Yeah. I like to tie flies a lot. So
I've gathered that. I don't know how your fingers keep working. I don't know how your eyes work.
Yeah.
But it's a passion for you. But the last time I was here, you were telling me that you were, I found this very intriguing, you were doing something with the corks out of wine bottles.
Yeah.
What's that whole process about?
So we've got just a little bit of creativity going on, I guess. We're going to try to do some popper heads and see what happens with some wine corks that we have. So we bought a little wood lathe and want to just kind of trim them down a little bit and shape them up a little bit and then stick some feathers on the end and see how they turn out and do some different shapes. And I think we'll be pretty successful with it. We're going to paint them up. We'll seal them and paint them and make them look really cool. I figured out a little way to do some airbrushing on it. It's kind of a new little process. I'm still experimenting a little bit with and learning about it a lot. But it's kind of the next step up from tying my average fly. So
I'm really looking forward to that. Now you're going to have a guarantee that each individual fly is going to smell like a certain type of wine or anything like that?
Well, that's where Dan comes in, and Dan's got that guarantee going on there, so he'll hook us up with that. So
so you take your popper from Billy Edgar and White Buffalo Fly Shop here, go down on the current river, and you don't have to take that wine bottle with you. You can sniff and cast.
You can sniff it out pretty good. So we're pretty excited about that. I think it's something different, and So far, I've been playing around turning a few of them, and so getting the shape all figured out, and I think it's going to be pretty successful.
Oh, I have no doubt about it. Yeah. Be sure to let me know when it come out, because I won't be one of the first customers.
You will be the first one to know.
I like sniffing wine.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a wine drinker. I'd rather...
Sweet or dry.
It depends on the mood I'm in.
There you go.
But I'd almost rather smell it than drink it, you know.
Yeah.
Remember the days back, 20 years or so ago, our doctor started telling us we need to drink that red wine for
Absolutely.
Our hearts, you know.
Yep.
I started trying that. I wasn't very successful.
Oh, man. It's all gone it anyway.
Yeah. I never made a very good wino. Well, I never was much of a drinker because I had so many alcoholics in my family down in southeast Missouri, in the swamps, you know.
Yeah.
They were great to make their own stuff, I think, you know. I had an old uncle who used to live across Cottonfield from bachelor most of his life. He didn't marry until later in life, but that poor boy, if he didn't have enough money to get whiskey, he'd just drink rub and alcohol, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
I never was that tough.
No, I wouldn't be either. Absolutely not.
I'll stick to these fine St. James area wines, you know.
Yep.
And I'll just sniff the corks. And it's even better if I can sniff it while I'm fishing, if it's a true-to-life popper, you know. What ever brought you to the point of thinking to do something like that?
I'm always looking for new ideas when it comes to fly tying. I'm getting all kinds of new, you know, like I was sitting in the house the other night, and I watch more tying videos than I do regular TV. And I have books and magazines and all kinds of stuff, and I'm always looking for something new to do. And I've always been kind of the crafty type, and you know, since I've been young, and it's just kind of the artistic part of it comes into play. And that's kind of my motif, I guess. That's kind of what I like.
Yeah.
Really enjoying doing is the art, the artsy part of it, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah.
Well, it's always incredibly fun for me to watch you types, because I'm certainly not one. I don't have an artistic bone in my body, but I did take art appreciation in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have somewhat of an appreciation for people with artistic abilities. Yeah. And you certainly do. I mean,
thank you.
Some of you guys, I know when I first started coming in the shop, Dan was always calling me his expert fly tire. You know?
Yeah.
He's never seen anything I tied. He wouldn't let me back in the shop if he had. I hide in the closet to tie my flies. You know, I could tie some of the ugliest bugs you ever saw.
Yeah.
But they catch fish.
Yeah. That's what's important.
Hey, I'm afraid somebody will steal my secrets and then make it artsy, you know.
That could be.
Yeah.
No, I started probably back in, I don't know, early high school, I guess, years ago. And I started doing a little bit of woodworking, and I started selling it. Somebody actually bought a piece of my work. And so from there
on. Fuel to the fire.
Yeah. And then my grandmother really supported me, and she was really there to, you know, to kind of encourage me and kind of teach
That's
me
awesome.
And kind of do it with me. And it just kept building from there. And so then with teaching for the last, I just retired teaching from and in the elementary school, so I did a lot of arts and stuff there, and so it just kept going, and then Dan's got the shop going now, so I'm tying some flies, and one thing led to another.
Living the good life.
We're here.
But isn't that something, you never know what started out as a vague interest, a little bit of a hobby, but you had fortune to have somebody to encourage you and build on that, and look what it's turned into.
Yeah.
It's going to be a passion that I'm sure that you're going to take part in the rest of your days.
Yeah.
And I can kind of identify with that. I was kind of the same way with writing and outdoor communications. I knew time I was 7 or 8 years old, I want to do something in the outdoor writing world.
Yeah.
I'd never heard the term outdoor communications, you know. That was a little bit beyond me at that point. But, you know, plugged along, got a newspaper. Well, I originally wrote, I guess, for the U.S. Army and got myself in trouble real quick. Like, I won't go into that story.
Yeah. But that's another podcast.
I've told that story before. I was in Vietnam somebody told somebody I could write a little bit, and I got stuck writing for a little R&R paper, you know.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. It kind of kept me out of the field some, you know.
Right.
It beat packing an M16 out
Absolutely.
In the jungle.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I had climbed on a helicopter, Huey helicopter, with a hippie pilot, long hair, beard, and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Just lifted off the compound, and he pulls out a joint out of his pocket, lights it up, and a bottle of whiskey from under the seat, and I'm thinking, man, It's a bad deal. I was a new officer, lieutenant, one of the smart aleck lieutenants. I don't think I was much of a smart aleck, but I was tempted to report this guy, and I thought, I'm smarter than that. I'm going to stay out of this. I'll never see this dude again, you know. Well, we was cruising along, and all of a sudden, this helicopter dropped. He turns on the guns, and I come up. I was about half asleep with an M16 to help him out a little bit. He's shooting up water buffalo.
Oh, my goodness.
And I really got upset then. I thought, why in the world is he doing that? And I kind of got on him a little bit about it, and he says, man, get used to it because it happens every day. It turns out that was the truth. But a few days later, my first article was due for this little R&R paper, and I got to thinking about that situation. Thought it was a little funny, and my first article for the U.S. Army in an R&R.
Oh, buddy.
The title of it is How to Hunt Water Buffalo with a Huey Helicopter.
Oh, my goodness.
And nobody checked my work. It went straight into publication. Well, 3 days later, the colonel was checking my work, and I heard some words I don't think I'd ever heard before.
I bet you did. Good grief. Yeah.
From then on, I had to turn my work into a captain. It wasn't near as colorful after that. But, yeah, I from there and got back home, started writing for, the Steel Wheel Star and Steel Wheel.
Yeah.
And Sava Beeman kind of helped me get started, and then wrote for some regional publications, and then, I expanded to statewide and eventually some national thing. Never dreamed it'd turn into what it did.
Everything builds up.
It does. And I'm sure you would tell young folks the same thing I tell people. I've had, hundreds, if not thousands, of young folks, particularly guys over the years, ask me, oh, man, I want to do that too. How do you do that? And they want instant success.
You know?
Well, you stick to it. You never quit.
Yeah, just keep going with it.
And that's what you've done with your hobby.
Yeah, especially with the shop opening up, it just kind of worked out once I retired. And Dan opened the shop up here, and I was able to get in here and start playing with my flies. I still had the very first fly that I ever tied, and I thought it was an amazing fly. And it was a woolly, I called a woolly bugger. Other people thought, I don't know what that is, but it had a hook.
Yeah.
And it was green, so I thought it was pretty amazing. But I keep that in my pot, in my little drawer
there. As a reminder.
As a reminder, I always look back at it and like, look at this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to do. And so if we can figure out a way to, and we are working on a way to figure out how to get more kids involved with the tying part of it. And, not just with the fly fishing, but also with the tying part of it. That's one of my goals, is to get them in here and to help them out and to teach them a few things. And so far we've had several teenagers, 13, 14-year-olds coming in, and they're wanting to learn, and they're taking a couple of classes now. And so they're showing a lot of interest in it. And just recently I had my 5-year-old granddaughter want to sit down and tie a fly. So we tied a little San Juan worm the other day. And,
cool.
And yeah, of course it was purple and pink. And
That'll catch fish.
Looked like a little piece of gum, when she was done. But it was cute, and she absolutely loved it. So that was.
Well, I bet neither one of you will ever forget that.
Absolutely not.
What a treasure. Yep. Well, here at the shop, a White Buffalo Fly Shop, you guys, once a month, I think.
Yeah.
A whole classes, so people can actually come in and get some expert instruction.
Yeah.
Tell me how that all works.
So we have our next classes is coming Thursday, and you can go online at whitebuffaloshop.com, and you can book a spot for that. Usually it's the first or the second Thursday of every month. We've had to move it this week. We had an event pop up that we had to take care of. But we're going to do this Thursday, and you can sign up. And we usually have some food and some drinks, and it usually fills up pretty quick. We have a limited number of people we have room for. So, come in, and we tie a couple flies. We have like a big video screen that we project everything up there. And usually I'm the one that's teaching the class, and then we have lots of the Ruby Doo fly fishermen that come in, and they go around and they assist, and we go really slow and to the point. Where you really get the understanding of it. So we have anybody from beginner fly tires to very advanced fly tires coming in. And so one person helps the other one. It's just like it's more of a group tying get together than it is an actual class. So
exactly. I've been over here a couple of times. Yeah. And of course, I'm always too intimidated to sit down and try to tie with you guys.
We'll get you in there.
Hey, I'm more interested in doing podcasts and taking photographs. I'm better at that, I think, and I'm not very good at that. But yeah, it's pretty phenomenal to look at the age span.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you say, you got some, I think there was a kid here last time, he was maybe in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
Really into this, man, quite an outdoorsman and a fierce one. In fact, I even had him on the podcast. He was so interesting. But it was incredible to watch how people help each other, and it moves slow enough, you know, even I could keep up.
That's what we want. That was one of our goals, you know, when we opened the shop, that we really wanted to bring some more kids in. And I have a few contacts where I can kind of make that happen and bring some kids in here. And so if I can promote that, that's what I'm going
to
do.
Well, kudos to you guys. I think you're doing a fabulous job here. It's just an intriguing little shop. It's always cool to walk in the White Buffalo Fly Shop, and somebody's always here to greet you. If nobody else will be here, Donnie Conway will be here.
Donnie's one of our regulars.
He likes to hang out here, and I don't blame him. I wish I had more time to hang out. I'd become a nuisance, I think. But
I love it.
I do, too, just the aura that's here, the atmosphere, lots of flies, fine fishing rods, you know.
Absolutely.
Hey, some of the best equipment. Love the T-shirts and the sweatshirts. I might have quit buying those things. Those people keep stealing them from me.
Well, you just had to buy another one then.
I know. I wait for new ones to come in, because the last nice sweatshirt I bought my wife, I hadn't even worn it yet. And there was a deal going on at church that needed kits put together for kids, you know, and there was a big, big 12-year-old boy that needed a sweatshirt. My wife gave him my wife White Buffalo Fly Fishing sweatshirt.
Well, I'm sure he's enjoying it.
I'm sure he is. Good advertisement walking around.
Yeah.
A kid wearing that, yeah.
Yeah.
So as soon as news one come in, I'll be back over here to have another one.
Okay.
Well, Billy, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. You're always fun, man. You're always fun.
Thank you.
New and good information, but I want to be the first to know when those wine cork poppers come out.
You'll be the first.
I want the first sniff.
Yep, you got it.
All right, we're going to take a break here, folks. But, hey, thanks for listening. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you heard that first segment with Billy Edgar, the one and only. Only person I've ever heard of is going to make poppers out of wine corks. Sniff and cast. I love it. Hope I get one of the first ones. I shouldn't be bragging on these things. I can just see the dollar signs in his eyes. The price is going up as we talk. Oh, he's quite the character. Quite the fly tire, man. Every time I come in here, he's working on something new. I don't know how he's going to top that one, though.
He's crafting it out, man.
Just this segment, crafting it out. Dan the man with me, fly shop owner here. Dan, where'd you come across this guy?
Well, Billy actually, he and I, our moms were good friends.
Really?
Yep, when we were growing up.
Now, that's pretty poor, blame it on your mom.
They were good friends. Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. But, yeah, Billy's a couple years older than I am, and he's a good runner in school.
He didn't have to tell that, did he, Billy?
Yeah, and so we share common interests, and we, you know, he got into fly tying a few years ago, and what are you, about 6-7 years ago?
Maybe, oh, that little, recently, huh?
Yeah, yeah, maybe a little bit more. Really tied up to that. And we all go through our phases where we get really locked into it, you know. And
yeah.
And Billy, he's been locked into it ever since. And he hasn't really slowed down any. And he really enjoys teaching the classes and things like that. And does a lot of really interesting patterns and starting to work on some unique things that he could put his signature on, you know. And so he's really worked hard on that and learning the different techniques and things like that. But, you know, the deal with fly tying, you can never learn all of it. There's so much. Materials, there's so many materials now. And, you know, and we look at those for the shop even. I mean, we've probably tripled the inventory of fly tying materials just in the last year, and it just continues to grow as far as what you have in here, because you see a fly that you want to tie, and so you're like, oh, we'll bring some of that in, and so you just keep adding to it.
Well, I'm sure you're always getting somebody walking through the door asking for something that you don't have, you know.
Always.
You seem to be pretty good about picking up stuff that people walk in, and particularly, I guess, people kind of from the area, because you know they're a pretty good chance they're going to be a repeat customer.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's a way it worked. But White Buffalo Fly Shop, something intriguing always going on here. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're into fly tying, fly fishing, man, it's just something that you can get passionate about, you know. And we just talked to a young lady that was in here, and she was a duck hunter. I'm passionate about that too, you know. And I actually talked to my wife several years ago about getting into coon hunting. And
all right.
You know, that happens at night, and that's where she kind of drew the line. You know, you can hunt and fish all day, but you're not going to hunt and fish all night too, you know.
That is a deal. What a blast, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I grew up doing that down in Mississippi County in Missouri Boot Hill, you know.
Yeah.
Been out on a farm, basically out in the swamps. We always had beagles, rabbit dog, black and tan coon hounds.
Yeah.
And I can remember the year I was in the eighth grade, me and a couple of buddies down the gravel road. Man, we coon hunted 3 or 4 or 5 nights a week.
Right.
I mean, we wasn't very old, you know, but my dad had a dog, some of them had a dog, and man, we'd do the dumbest things, you know. We went out with about a close to a foot of snow on the ground one time coon hunting. We just went down the bayou, run through our farm, you know, lots of trees on it, lots of coons run up down that bayou, but we went in tennis shoes.
Yeah.
You know, freezing our feet off.
Absolutely,
I thought my toes were going to fall off, so we stopped and built a little fire, you know, to dry our tennis shoes out. Well, of course, as dumb as we were, one of the boys' tennis shoes fell in the fire.
Yeah.
Pretty good fire. There wasn't no getting them out.
No.
So I wound up giving up my socks. He walked back home, you know, a mile in the snow in his sock feet, and we had soaking wet tennis shoes. And I don't know how none of us ever died, you know.
I know, man.
Great adventures.
Absolutely, man. It just seems like, you know, when we were growing up, we would spend the entire summer in the woods, and we'd just leave camp set up, you know. And I know that there is a group of kids that are still experiencing that now, and I know that everyone, you know, is concerned about how much kids are getting out and wildlife and things like that. I know they're concerned, but I do know there's a pretty good segment of people that are still doing things like that. We have a lot of them come in the shop here, and they're tying flies with us and learning to cast and, you know, making the switch from a spinning rod over to a fly rod and things like that. And so there's at least a good core group of kids that are getting to experience childhood like we did, you know. And so,
well, that's great and good to hear. Yeah, and I believe that too, because you know, fishing and chasing bugs and all that sort of thing comes natural to kids if they get the opportunity. But I got to tell you a quick story. You're talking about leaving camp set up. Well, on the north side of our farm, we had a wild cane patch. It was 30 yards wide, would, you know, run the whole length of the farm. So it was a good quarter mile long, man, and these canes would get big like bamboo, 16 feet tall. I have an unlimited supply of fishing poles, you know.
Yeah.
But a little buddy of mine, we wanted to build ourselves a tree house. Well, there were a few trees big enough to, excuse me, put a tree house in, but we didn't have a wood supply.
Yeah.
Well, we went to the backside of one of my dad's hog houses, a barn type thing, and helped ourselves to the whole backside of that barn, you know, stripped that wood off their big wide cypress boards. We had a two-story treehouse, man, ladder up through it. I mean, we can get about 30 foot high.
Yeah.
Boy, we were going strong, and that cane was so thick, we'd jump out of that treehouse and hit those canes and never hit the ground. It was so thick, and I'm surprised we didn't run a cane through our bodies, you know. But lo and behold, our treehouse burned down. Somebody set it on fire, and I think it might have been my dad.
Yeah.
Because we got our butts beat, too.
Oh, man, I tell you. Dude, I remember that. We had a similar thing. We had one of our friends that lived out AA from us and had a big, you know, three-story like you're talking about, like you guys built. Man. Had a big one. They called it the honeybee. And so we would go out there, and you'd just have all kinds of crazy stuff going on. You'd running around and then using that as your home fort, you know, and things like that.
It was
a blast.
Oh, man, what a great adventure. At one point, we had a slide for life out of ours, you know. I got in trouble with my dad several times over that cane patch. I got the big itch one time to trap some swamp rabbits in that.
Yeah.
So I couldn't afford to buy a trap, so I made my own. I had a good path through there and rabbit tracks all over it, so I just dug myself about a 3-foot hole, covered up with tiny little canes and put leaves over it. I mean, you couldn't tell it was there.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't catch any rabbits, but my dad fell in it, about broke his leg. I think my backside was burning pretty good again. Oh,
there is no doubt. Just wear you out, man.
Oh, I tell you, but I wouldn't trade that lifestyle for anything, you know. But that's, from there for my interest in fly fishing picked up. I bought my first fly rod from an older guy that I worked with. Well, he was kind of a drunk, and I took advantage of him.
Right.
bought a $25 fly rod outfit from him from $11, and it was only 3 days old, so did all right there, you know. But that's what spurred my interest. Of course, I was casting big poppers to catch bass out of the Black Bayou that ran through our farm, but that's what started my interest in fly fishing, and it's been a lifelong interest, and I never dreamed I'd get to fly fishing the places that I have, all the way from Alaska to the Yucatan, you know. But 95% of my fly fishing efforts have been right here in the Missouri Ozarks.
Yeah.
And you know yourself, we can get to how many rivers?
Oh, man. They're,
in an hour, hour and a half.
I mean,
nine or ten.
Just mentioning within the, we've got the Blue Ribbon streams, and then we have what we designated as the 12 smallmouth rivers. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, just infinite number of miles here within the state, you know, and then jumping across Arkansas. I mean, we're incredibly fortunate, you know.
Oh, we are. You're not going to find anything like it between the Appalachians and the Rockies, for sure.
Yeah.
But, gosh, within an hour and a half, I can get to so many of them. Of course, I can get to the Merrimack in 10 minutes or less.
Right.
And so I do spend a lot of time there. And I made quite a float trip a few weeks ago. You know, I'm not the youngest guy in the world anymore, but I planned a grand float trip. I want to do that little stretch of the Curtaway, and it flows into the Huzal, about a mile and a half, and then into the Merrimack, another 3.5 miles. I won't do that again for a while. I have a heavy kayak.
Out.
Oh, yeah. On the Curtaway, I didn't realize the water was as thin as it was. I drug quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But I caught fish in the Curtaway and on the Huzal because they were still pretty crystal clear and in good shape. The Merrimack had been up and dropping, was still kind of muddy.
Yeah.
I didn't catch fish out of the Merrimack, but that's what happens a lot of times when the water's dropping.
Yeah.
But you know what? I was out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty interesting because, you know, we were talking about that very thing just yesterday in the shop about high water conditions and things like that, about fishing high water. And it's just such an unusual thing because, like, as the water's coming up, they just, you know, they have their pick of it. And then a lot of people think, well, where do they go, you know, in this high water events and stuff like that, and talking about them, you know, about how they lock down in the slow water and things like that. And they, and trout especially, they'll go down deep below to where they can get a little bit more cushion using some of those currents and things like that to hold position and stuff. And I think that's sort of why we've had a little bit better of a spring here. In our region, we haven't had the aggressive flooding that we had last spring. But this one today, wow, last couple of days, Merrimack is probably about as big as I've seen it.
Yeah, you know? Certainly the Hoosaw was southeast of us here. Yeah, they really got clobbered. But that's another thing every fisherman, but especially fly fishermen, have taken into consideration. They go back to these streams after these massive floods.
Yeah.
Things are going to be different.
Absolutely.
So, hey, where that favorite hole used to be, it may not even be there anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We know there'll be lots of new cover in the streams because lots of trees and trash comes down, you know, and things change dramatically. So, hey, just relying on what you've known from the past may not fly.
Yeah, that's true. Necessary evil of flooding, right? And, you know, that's the whole thing about, you know, I was listening to a podcast last week about, you know, just sort of rejuvenating streams and things like that. And, you know, we get sort of a natural benefit of our flood waters, and we don't have to actually put wood in the stream and,
exactly.
and repositioning things and all the things that they are dealing with and trying to reinvigorate some of these in the stream projects. And, you know, some of that natural alluvial soil that gets into the river and those things, we don't really have to tinker with things too much. They stay pretty healthy here, you know, by and large, and so we're pretty fortunate in that fact also.
Well, like I gotta say, you know, there is a fun aspect though of going back to river after it's flooded just to see what has happened. But a river is a living thing, and you get massive amounts of water coming down. It's amazing what water can do. The things that find big rocks in places I've never seen big rocks before, you know, that sort of thing. But there's an intrigue to that, coming back to a stream when you know it's changed and just trying to figure it out. And it's a pretty good feeling when you figure it out and you do catch a decent fish, whether it's a trout or smallmouth or whatever, you know. But, hey, the floods seem to be coming bigger more often, and so it's something I think, at least in our lifetimes, we're going to have to live with.
Yeah, I think so. There's not really much getting around there. I remember when I was a teenager experiencing some of the bigger floods, and it seems like every year, you know, the flood stage, there's always the statement made, it's never been this big before.
Yeah.
Every single year. So if that's the case, I don't know. I mean, you know, if it is truly the biggest it's ever been, I do know that store at Huzzah is flooded, and it hadn't been that way, 3 foot of water in that thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, rain came down so quickly, I guess, and some of those areas they had up to a foot of rain, you know?
Yeah.
And to come down a small watershed, it's going to stack up
man.
High.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, the important thing is no lives lost. Maybe one. There was one lady, I guess, from Davisville who got swept away, and last I'd heard, they had not found her. Pray to God that they do. But, you know, it's something, again, that we are going to have to deal with. But I think people are getting smarter and smarter about the flood situation. I know the outfitters all across southeast Missouri, the canoe and camping groups really did a fine job of getting everybody out, because they didn't lose anybody.
Yeah.
And that's pretty phenomenal when you got thousands of people out there.
Yeah.
National Guard came out in some situations and helped out. But, Dan, with the waters receding, and, you know, we like to get out there in the summertime. I call them fair weather fishermen, you know, people that fish. Yeah, they fish while the kids are out of school and all that sort of thing. Don't have a thing against them. That's probably my least favorite time of the year to fish, when it's so hot and humid.
Yeah.
And we have to take into consideration, too, you know this, particularly with the trout, when the streams get back low to normal stage or lower and it's hot and water temperatures come up a little bit, really have to be careful with the fishing for trout.
Absolutely. Keep them in the water for sure. You know, I mean, we were joking about this as I've got the longest net that I can have right now, you know, keeping them, you know, if you're going to land fish and trying to keep them in as deep a water also as you can, you know, that's sort of the thing. It's But I mean, there are a lot of instances where we'll completely turn off of even trout fishing here, maybe for the next 2 months. So
yeah, exactly, because sort of, they're very fragile fish, and mm-hmm. with low oxygen content, you take them out of that water any length of time, mm-hmm. you've just written them a death certificate.
Yeah.
So hey, take care of these fish. Go get after the smallmouth and the largemouth and some of Kentucky spotted bass. Eat those rascals.
Oh, man. Man. Yep.
But I chuckle when you mentioned the long-handle net. I've never had one of those long-handle nets. Mm-hmm. I got one with fairly composite. You know, I got over at, what's the old guy's name over at Bennett Springs? Been around forever. Up on
Charlie.
Old Charlie.
Oh,
yeah.
Charlie, yeah.
Yeah, Charlie sold me a net. He didn't tell me the plastic net on the bottom of it was rotten, I think, you know. It hadn't lasted as long as I thought it would. So I got a birthday coming up pretty quick, like in my wife, what do you want for your birthday? I want one of those long-handled fishing nets. So she gets online and orders the thing that comes in. It don't have a long handle on it. She said, well, I guess they were talking about the width. So I still don't have a long handle.
Man.
You know, but hey, E for effort, you know.
Yep.
But hey, trout fishing here, it's not going to be long. We're going to be getting into fall, you know, and that's one of my favorite times of the year. And you get, you know, dozens and dozens of fly fishermen coming through the shop here. And most of them, I'm sure, are looking for information, little mm-hmm. direction, that sort of thing. Where's one of the most common places that you send people to fly fish?
Well, it really is very dependent on what they're trying to fish for. Like, there are people that really just prefer to do trout park fishing, and that's completely fine. I mean, that has its own challenges, of course. And then we have a lot of people that are trying to work through the Blue Ribbon Slam,
our
you know, working the smaller streams for the
one of those
for our,
is the right
stream bred rainbows and things like that. So it's very dependent on that, and so a lot of times they'll know sort of majesty, you know, the what they want to achieve in that way, and I direct them based on that. You know, and so a lot of times newer fly fishers and things like that. We'll have them spend some time at one of the trout parks to just get a little bit more of their bearings about what they're doing, whether it's casting or whatever. But there are some areas where the trout park's not so great for that.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins of Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade,
and a few smaller creeks in the Missouri area. Because we're all like,
whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or
ages
that are
just getting into the sport.
Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft.
I didn't get into sports.
I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work of catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore launch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
We've got them going all over the state, that's for sure.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly
Shop. Do you get
shop.
Much feedback from those folks?
We do, actually, yeah. I had a young man call me this morning about some stuff that we talked about yesterday, and he was trying to work out a little bit more strategy, because we still have, even though we have some flooding on the bigger rivers, some of them are in really good shape right now, too. He was sort of giving me some feedback on what he had seen and trying to figure it out, you know, get a little bit of a different angle, and then sometimes I'll get text messages, and I get a lot of pictures of things that people are looking at to be like, what is this, you know, or, you know, just trying to give them information of how to get there, you know, and whether it be through rigging or length of rod or even, you know, fly selection and things like that, and just trying to figure out how to get them to where they need to be so they have a little bit more success, you know. And so none of us have perfect days, but at least the information's a little bit helpful, you know.
Absolutely. There's got to be a great feeling for you when you do give direction to somebody like that and you hear back from them and had success.
Yeah.
Hey, you've had success too.
Yeah, absolutely. That is exactly the truth about it too, because there are some things that like even, you know, I work through, you know, when I'm out there by myself trying to figure something out, and then it may take me an entire day to figure it out. But, you know, if I can give that information to somebody that saves them an entire day, you know, then that's really helpful.
It really is. You know? Excellent point, because, you know, I learned pretty much on my own, and boy, did I made every mistake that
absolutely
could be made like six times.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
I didn't even know they had fly shops. I'm not sure they did back in my day.
I bet you they were probably more hybrid, huh?
Oh, yeah, few and far between. But and there's not a lot of them today either. Mm-hmm. Next closest fly shop to you is probably in St. Louis or Springfield, you know. But the thing is, people can walk in here and lean on you guys. You've got decades of experience between you. Cuts light years off of that learning curve. And we all know, we love the romance of fly fishing, but it's still pretty sweet to have some success.
Yeah.
To have that hook up on a nymph, or in particular see a trout rise to a dry fly.
Oh, man.
There's few things in the outdoor world that can match the beauty and the intrigue of all of that. Well, Dan Wynn, man, it's been tremendous to be back in the shop and listen to you guys and, hey, watch people come in and go out and learn more about fly fishing. I'd like for you here in the last couple minutes of the program, tell us again when your fly fishing courses take place and your hours are here at the shop.
Yeah, here at the shop we do, as you know, you've been to several of these, we do at least one monthly get together fly tying classes and things like that. And it's not quite as formal as you know, we're not going to school here, but we sort of are, you know, and so it's really more about getting together with a group of people. And we have a lot of people that are repeat. We have a lot of ladies, a lot of kids, you know, that come in and are learning their first path. But we do one of those that's generally the first Thursday of every month. The second Thursday of every month, my bad there. And second Thursday of every month. And then we'll do a rod building course about every other month, generally. And we're building on graphite blanks here in the shop. And we get those pretty much to the completion after the first day. And then we have a touch-up day. Then we also are building bamboo rods here also. And so there's a big gamut of things that we're working on. We're going to start implementing more programming for kids and ladies this year. That was been a really big goal for me here, is to work through some of that. We've had a lot of requests to have some specific streamside type clinics and things like that. And so we're going to work into doing things like that this year, and we're going to continue add more tying materials, add more rods and gear here in the shop, and more apparel and all those things. And so that's what we're working toward.
And I'm almost envious, but thing is, I can be out fly fishing while you're sitting in the shop.
Well, you do a lot of it, too. You're on those rivers every day about, aren't you?
Oh, I wish. You know, I have a huge garden that takes up maybe too much of my time, you know. But you got to have some balance in your life.
Yeah.
That's what my wife told me.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. She's generally right. I mean, she hadn't been wrong yet, has she?
I wouldn't say it if I thought so. She's a wonderful lady, very supportive. I could say that.
I can say the same about my bride, too.
Yeah,
that's
well,
for
we're,
sure.
We both married up, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, folks, from Dan Wynn and I, we are living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.